Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
First up, let's take a look at the business stories that are making this morning's papers and indeed a few others. Joining me, as I said earlier, Doug Keating of Avalon and Linda Daly is a business reporter with the Sunday Times. Good morning, all and everybody here.
Morning, Bobby.
Now, Doug, we might start with you. The headline in the Irish Independent today tells us that there's a triple threat as property tax to rise for thousands of households. Is this kite flying or is this actually happening?
Well, in fairness to the Irish Independent, they've done sort of crunched the numbers and sort of done a data-led piece of journalism to try to understand how the changes that are going to happen to the local property tax might impact you. And they've looked across it local authority by local authority, so you can kind of see how they think it might affect you. A bit of context here. Earlier in the year, Pascal Donoghue announced changes to how the local property tax would be levied. He's trying to extract, he estimates, about another 50 million on top of the 630 million on the tax take that they took in 2025. So we're definitely going to be paying more, otherwise he's not going to get more money. But the government says that for 96% of people, they forecast that, you know, the maximum change might be 5 or 6% up, and the government is has widened the bands to try to make it. Even though house prices have risen, the idea is they've widened the bands so you're less likely to trigger into a new band. Now, the Irish Independent talks of this triple threat that might mean you have to pay more. The triple threat being rising house prices, changing the bans, and that's where I do have a question mark, because I think the changing of the bans unquestionably makes it less likely that you'll pay more tax. But the third one then being that councils can raise local property tax by up to 15%, and a lot of councils are. Now, to illustrate their story, they do that classic thing of taking an example, and it's a pretty worst-case scenario. This is taken from County Carlow, where they look at the median house price in 2021 was 200,000. They estimate that's risen to 260,000 now, which would move you from band one to band two. And overall, including the, I think Carlo has gone the full 15% up. I'm just trying to check that. Overall, they're saying that your local property tax there goes from €94 a year to €270 a year, a whopping 187% increase. But look, they go and review across the piece different councils. Dublin City Council up 24%. South Dublin County Council, they estimate 18%. But the pushback from a lot of the councils is, no, this isn't the case. The bans are being widened. We stick to the line from the government. 96% of people will be only paying a little bit more. So, I mean, the one thing that jumped out, and Linda and I were discussing this, is, and many listeners may not realise this, that apparently on the 1st of November, we are all expected to go in, look into our soul, log into the local property tax portal and assess how much our house has risen in value. So we have to kind of, cause self-pain as we take that decision.
And I see here as well, Linda, that bans are currently based on 2021 valuations, and houses that were valued at under 200,000 could then face steep increases. Like, there's very few houses out there worth less than 200,000?
Yeah, I suppose maybe.
You'd have to say.
In some parts, rural parts of the country. But that 2021, what the government has tried to do is offset it by changing these bans. So, for example, in that Carlow example, they're stating 200,000 for the median price will go up to 260,000. That's a 30% increase. But the bans will increase by 20%. So, I mean, I suppose it is a bit confusing.
Yeah, and almost the fact that it's complicated means that it's difficult to see. But I think, you know, obviously everybody who has a property will see this in the cold light of day later this year, because they'll either be going up, staying the same, or unlikely in some, a few cases maybe, going down. I see Dunleary Rathdown Council have decided to reduce the property tax by 15%.
Yeah, I suppose, like, a lot of the councils have taken a very populist approach to the property tax, in fairness, you know, and they've gone below the 15% for years. This is kind of, I think, one of the first times that so many of them have actually decided to go above the price by 15% rather than below it. There's a number who are still sticking.
Yeah, so if you say, well, why has Carlow gone up by 15%? and Dunleary right down, coming down by 15%.
I mean, I guess the councils, you know, the thing about local property tax, I understand that money is then ring fenced for councils to provide goods and services. So the councils that are increasing are saying, look, we are using this to deliver you your public services improvements, and Dunleary Rathdown councillors and a few others have obviously decided that maybe there's more votes in cutting it. But, you know, if the paving stones start breaking and there's weeds growing in the street, then maybe the voters will take a different view.
Absolutely. Let's move on to Cliff Taylor's piece in today's Irish Times. Ireland has a golden economic opportunity. Don't blow it, he tells us. And I think it's a well-written piece, as always, by Cliff. But he's pointing out that these cost of living packages that we've had, Linda, in the last couple of budgets, they've given away 16.5 billion in one-offs since 2022. And he's sort of saying if we hadn't done that, and I think maybe, you know, it's maybe easy to say that now, but, you know, these are very, very expensive incentives. And the other problem with them is that they reward the needy and the not so needy in the same sweep of the brush. So they're expensive because they include everybody.
Yeah. Look, Cliff does acknowledge that he could be accused of comparing apples and oranges. That 16.5 billion that was spent on one-off changes, he said, could have paid for the metro. And there's another good example he gives here. 570 million spent on energy credits last year would have paid for the cost of the Dart extension to Drogheda.
Yeah.
But, you know, coming out of COVID, everybody wanted those energy credits. And I suppose really the trick is for the government is to get a balance between infrastructure and the long-term thinking and the short-term thinking.
Yeah, I think the only out for the government here is if they actually can, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff and literally direct one-offs where they're needed. Now, there may be all sorts of pain and complications around that, but no politician wants to be arriving on the doorstep saying we're stopping this, that and that. Sorry about that, but we need to think long-term and sort of short-term. In other words, they won't be thanked and they'll be basically voted out of office for taking such a stance.
Yeah, and as well, he points out that last year there was an election, so they obviously went the populist route again as well and tried to kind of win the votes with their double child credit.
One piece in that same article, Doug, that caught my eye, that was that job numbers in key tech areas are down by 7,700, which is 4% over the past year. And then, you know, when we move on to our next piece, which says how buoyant the jobs market is, the tech sector doesn't seem to be reflecting that.
Well, I guess, I mean, to try to link the two, I mean, Cliff's I guess trying to make the point again that we're, you know, we don't want to be too reliant on all this corporation tax, and it's all about broadening the tax base or cutting these once offs will save money. And you know, last year's election, you know, I think was a case of the classic Saint Augustine, you know, make me good, but not yet, as the government splashed it out. And this year may be trickier for them, but I guess Cliff's talking about risks that are on the horizon. You mentioned that the tech jobs down 4%, concerns about the impact of AI, risks on corporation tax, potentially pharmaceuticals. What will the 15% tariff mean for that? But if we do bridge to that Daily Mail article, as you say, we've all got jobs, but there's nowhere to live is the headline. So I guess it's crystallizing that point around strong economy, but problems on infrastructure. There was an interesting stat at the top, I think. So we've 2.8 million people with jobs, the highest ever on record. That's up 500,000 in the last 5 years, which kind of blew me away. I didn't realise that it had gone up so much. And it reminds us that in 1961, 2.8 million was the population of the entire
state. Those three are amazing statistics.
So obviously, you know, over that period, Ireland's economy has been transformed. People aren't having to leave like they used to, but also huge amounts of immigration. Quote CSO statistics showing that there were 49,000 people coming into the country in the second quarter, or, you know, coming and helping work in our economy and stimulate growth. But there is that problem of you know, housing. And there's another stark statistic that in the first half of the year, there were 6,300 commencements, according to Department of Housing figures. Last year, that number was 34,000.
That doesn't augur well.
So, you know, we're having more and more people, but with the housing starts, seems to be slowing. House price growth announced in June is close to 8% year on year. The only thing I'm not mad keen on this article is, I mean, it has this, it would be wrong to suggest Ireland is full. In a way, I'm uncomfortable with this juxtaposition of immigration and housing. And just, I think we do have to be very cautious on that.
Absolutely. Linda, the US Federal Reserve, Trump has been all over Powell for the last couple of weeks, using him as a kind of a punch bag. But it appears that there seems to be some thinking now that the interest rates in the United States might be cut in September.
Yeah, the relationship between Trump and Powell has not been good at all. And we had that recent awkward kind of joint press conference, didn't we, where he was accusing him of all sorts. But so it looks like he may actually be finally moving. But this is the moving to cut the rate. So he's gone against what the central bank and the ECB has done. And he's maintained the rates at about 4 to 4.25%. The interesting thing is the reason he's thinking of dropping them is because that the jobs market is slowing. So, I mean, it's always this double-edged sword of
inflation and the jobs market.
Yeah.
But the Reserve's job, as it's quoted in the Irish Times, the two jobs are to keep the job market healthy and to keep the lid on inflation.
That's
the balancing act.
You know, he says you know, risks to inflation are tilted to the upside and risks to employment to the downside. So, as I read his speech, he was saying, yes, there does seem to have been inflationary impact from tariffs, but he seems to view them as maybe once off and the economy can cope with it. And that's given the emerging risks on the job front, he's minded to reduce potential. Well, we're reading through his words, but the market is interpreting this that the Fed will vote for a quarter point cut in September. I mean, it is amazing, as you step back from it, how closely watched, you know, the words of this one man in a ski resort in you know, out on the West Coast, you know, yesterday made dramatic moves
on the stock market.
In markets. I mean, the Dow Jones went up to an all-time high, up 1.9%. The S&P, having dropped for 5 days, was up 1.5%. NASDAQ up 2%. So markets basically say, oh, lower interest rates are good for economic growth. But, you know, if inflation takes off, if this AI bubble is a bubble, then who knows what could happen. And I know we're going to get onto that a little bit later.
Yeah. Domino's, Linda, interesting business, seemed to have traded well in good times and in bad. Real steady business there, pre-tax profits at the operator Shorecal declining by 14%, but still a hefty 4.8 million last year.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at this 14% and think, oh, we've all stopped eating pizza. I don't think that's the case, as Gordon Deegan in his piece, which would have kind of been syndicated to various newspapers, says that it's not comparable. This is 52 weeks, whereas last year was 53 weeks. So, you know, there's a week missing there. And it is due to higher operation costs, and I suppose costs did rise last year. Shorecal is an Irish company, but actually last year they sold their business, their Domino's business, to the main group in the UK. So I'm not sure, you know, the figures, like, is Shorecal now owned by the Domino's group, or if the figures are related to the full year of operations.
That's an interesting point, actually, because it's you could read it both ways.
But I mean, it was noticeable sort of employee numbers up from 500 to 660, staff costs up by a couple of million. Hard to read through the numbers, but I would maybe think that maybe there's a bit of investment in growth going on. Yes, some rising costs, but also investing in growth going forwards as the group company has bought in.
It's also an interesting, you know, the same happened with McDonald's in this country, that a franchise operator built up a number of outlets, I think it was 20-odd outlets, and then the parent company buys back effectively the established business. So it's not unusual for this kind of thing to happen.
Yeah, and it was a good sale by the Irish lads.
Yeah. We said we'd talk about AI, Doug. Before the golden age of AI must come the crash, history suggests. I thought this was a very interesting piece by John Thornhill in today's Irish Times.
Yeah, so this is a piece syndicated from the Financial Times by John Thornhill. And it's, you know, it is looking at this big question of whether the high level, huge level of investment in AI is merited. And the article hangs off concerns off a recent research from a credible source, MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, which is saying that 95% of companies are getting zero return from their AI investment. And yet, you know, investment in AI continues apace. The article also quotes data showing from Morgan Stanley saying that by 2029, it's expected that $3 trillion will be invested in data centers alone to power artificial intelligence. So this article then draws on a financial historian, Carlotta Perez, who's sort of an expert on economic cycles and bubbles, etc. And she talks about AI being, you know, part of the fifth technological revolution. And, you know, there's a phase, a cycle in every phase of development, and this she calls the installation phase. And
which is like a bust before the boom.
Well, it seems to be that, you know, installation phases can go a bit manic and there's huge amounts of capital attracted and that can all go pop. But she does make the point that actually, you know, even if it goes pop, the infrastructure is still there. So there was, you know, a railway bubble in the 19th century. Yes, all these railway companies went bust, but hey, there was still a massive railway network. Famously, you know, the dot-com bubble went, you know, burst, and but, you know, yeah, technology still pushed on. But the argument she makes is that, you know, for a golden age to happen, you need civil society to have more control over the development of these new technologies. And I guess that's slightly a concern with AI. Like, are these entrepreneurs getting ahead of themselves?
Linda, I think the stock market certainly got rattled when the China's cheaper DeepSeek AI model rattled investors on the basis that all of a sudden they had come up with something that was significantly cheaper.
Yeah.
And a lot of these AI investors, and as Doug points out, the capital numbers are huge.
Yeah.
Kind of said, oh, we've spent all this money and now there's a Chinese outfit able to do it for half the price.
And half the size of the data centers. So that was the big issue. You know, they'd announced this. It was literally a week, was it, after they announced it with Trump that they were going to invest all this money in the data centers. I mean, obviously the market has stabled out since then.
Well, pushed on even then.
Yeah.
Back up ahead.
Sorry, it has, yeah. But I suppose really the question is whether AI will change our lives, really. I'm not convinced. My sister put in, asked it how to add up to €20 or $20. She's in Canada recently and it got the sum wrong. So it's not as good as we think.
There you go, Linda. That's how you decide these things.
Yeah.
Forget about the $750 billion that's been invested here. It's all about calculating the power of $20.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me about these bottomless brunches. I'm not aware of them, but because they go unnamed, at least the distillery is offering these propositions, but bottomless brunches in breach of laws on alcohol. So say researchers call for robust response for illegal drinks promotions. What's going on here, Doug? Who's offering these promotions?
Well,
and what are they?
Well, it's a little bit unclear. I mean, bottomless brunches are, I guess, something I might associate with, you know, New York restaurants and, you know, mimosas and Bloody Marys.
All you can eat.
You know, all you can eat, all you can drink. But they seem to have made their way to Ireland. And although the outlets aren't named, there are examples, you know, a Dublin restaurant advertising, I think it's €49.50 per person. You'll be treated to a delectable brunch, main of dishes paired with an endless flow of cocktails. So,
but you did read the last piece. The next piece is interesting. All within a relaxed 2 hour sitting.
Yeah, I'd say they get you out the door fairly sharply.
So there is a cap on it. If you can, all you can drink, you can, but you gotta wolf down the cocktails in 2 hours by the sounds of things.
But the concern is there's various bits of legislation that are aimed at prohibiting the sale of alcohol at reduced prices or using discounts as ways of promotion. And researchers at the Technological University of Shannon have said that they believe that these kind of promotions actually are in contravention of the law. So it will be interesting to see whether actually, you know, this gets picked up on and starts being clamped down on, because, I mean, there's 3 or 4 restaurants cited in the piece around the country.
Yeah, and as I understand it here, reading the piece, Linda, it's actually the health inspectors, I think, that police this, because it's a response from the HSE and the government is required to recognise alcohol as a commercial detriment of health. So I think this policy is largely enforced by them.
Yeah, and look, if they are breaking the law, so be it. I mean, there is a kind of, you know, thought, the person in me who has probably enjoyed a bottomless brunch on one or two occasions. Like, don't take something else away from us, please. But I do think I would approach a bottomless brunch the way I approach a all-you-can-eat restaurant. I panic. I don't have much. And as you said, it is in a time frame. So you don't actually drink as much as you'd think.
There's only so many pizzas you could wolf down in 2 hours, Doug. Roll with it, ministers. This is all about ministers being cool. Nice piece in the Irish. Simon Harris, there's a picture of him in here, dressed in his Oasis gear. Some of the comments around him, he did an Instagram post of him at the Oasis wearing his bucket hat. One commenter said he looked like an undercover cop, which I thought was quite interesting. But there are plenty of examples, Linda, are there not, of politicians trying to be cool here?
Well, there are, yeah. Leo Varadkar was famously a big fan of Kylie Minogue. Pascal Donoghue likes everyone from Billie Eilish to Led Zeppelin, this article says. And we've had, you know, like, yeah, Enda Kenny being at Springsteen. I suppose a lot of the commentators who weren't happy with Simon Harris being at the Oasis concert agree with contravening employment law. They think that politicians should work 24/7 and never have any time off and just work around politics.
Doug, I don't know what you thought about it, but the interesting piece for me in this was that Pascal Donoghue had skipped an important dinner in 2022 despite Ursula von der Leyen being in attendance because he had to go and see The Cure.
Yeah, I think
did you know that?
I didn't know it, and I think it's rather charming. Pascal Donoghue is a man of many sides, and I hadn't realised he was a huge fan of The Cure. And look, it was probably, you know, quite a boring formal dinner where the business had already been done, so I'd much rather go and see The Cure belting out their hits.
I'm with you on that one. Doug Keating from Avalon, Linda Daly from the Sunday Times, as always, thanks for a great review of the business stories.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.